Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Mitch Ryback with Tropical Realty of SunTree in Melbourne, Florida. Last year, he closed 301 transactions with a total sales volume of $43 million. His average sales price was $142,000, of which 81% were buyers and 19% were sellers. He operates a team with 21 members, 14 agents, 2 lead conversion agents, 1 office manager, 1 marketing coordinator, 1 stats administrator, 1 bookkeeper, and 1 team leader. Mitch Ryback is the team leader of the Tropical Realty of SunTree team. He has been an agent for 11 years. He works the Brevard County market. In his best year, 2010, Mitch sold 329 homes worth $47 million. In this call, Mitch talks about why he based his practice on buyer sales, how he generates 75% of his business from cheap internet leads. Internet metrics like cost per click, cost per lead, and cost per sale. How he can turn $200 into a closed transaction over and over again. How to design a successful Google ad. An unknown internet lead source that costs half as much as Google AdWords and generates 33% more leads. Which landing page is better, open search or forced registration? What was his biggest marketing mistake? How to build and manage a huge database of leads. Exactly what's inside his high conversion follow-up system. What did he do to sell 36 homes in his first year? Why he built his team based on mediocrity. How to use lead conversion agents to convert more leads and make more sales. Team structure and pay, net profit percentage, and more. Welcome to the call, Mitch.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
Mitch, before we talk about what you're doing now, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
I've always been an entrepreneur, so I've owned a lot of companies over the past years. Anything from paintball business, which was my most fun, to a restaurant, which was my most worst. 1995, I was probably the first online dating service. I had a regular dating service at the time. I thought it'd be kind of cool if you could do it from home. Of course, you couldn't do it from home at that time. The technology wasn't there. So as soon as we found the technology, which took a while, we built the first online dating service, and that turned into a private label product for radio groups and got me known as Mr. Internet in the radio industry, which was really fun, until 2000 when the market crashed and we ended up losing everything, which is a part of life in, when you're in business for yourself. And everybody said, Mitch, you'd be really good at real estate. And I'm like, I don't know. It's not my thing. And then, of course, somebody talked me into it, and here I am today. So basically, most of my internet skills came from running a pretty large internet company through the 90s.
How did you get into real estate? Sounds like your friends kind of pushed you that way.
Well, I'd been offered a lot of jobs at the time when the internet market crashed, running internet programs for some of the major radio stations in the country, radio groups in the country. But they meant traveling every Sunday through Friday, and I really wasn't into doing that. I'd just been finished doing that for 5 years. My buddy Joe's a real estate developer up in Massachusetts, and he's like, you know, you'd be really good at it. You got the gift of gab, and that's all it takes. And he said, I'll help you out. We'll buy a couple properties together, a couple investment properties, and get rolling. And so finally, it took me about 6 months after I took my class before I pulled the trigger and actually started working in real estate.
Did you start working up in Massachusetts, or did you work down in Florida?
No, I started here. I moved to Florida in 1999. We had our company under contract to sell, and part of the contract was I had to lower the expenses. So I had been doing a radio show, Ask Mitch the Date Doctor, a lot of fun, out of Universal Studios in Orlando. And so I was, you know, pretty familiar with the Orlando area. And then a friend of mine, who happens to be my wife now, which is funny how that happened, lived over in the coast here. And I called her one day and said, what's the office space like over here? And she said, $12 a foot on the ocean when she looked it up for me. I'm like, you're kidding me. And I came over and I was looking at the beach from my office space to be and called my partners and said, we're moving to Florida. 30 days later, I was in Florida.
When you got into real estate, did you have a fast start or a slow start?
I was big pretty much the day I started. It was an interesting start because I started my real estate career September 10th, 2001. So the next day, of course, everything stopped for a little while. And, I was just, to me, this is the easiest thing I've ever done in my life. I've built some really big companies and a lot of work. And being a realtor was like a part-time job. I was only working like 50, 60 hours. I thought it was part-time. But basically, I sold 36 homes my first 12 months. And I had I started in September. In January, I had 9 closings. So it was pretty quick. I mean, I started off really quick because it's all systems. You build good systems, you can do anything. It doesn't really matter how long you've been doing something.
How many homes did you sell last year?
Last year, my team did 301 homes. And that was actually with 14 agents. We added more agents this year, but there was 14 agents last year. And then, of course, my admin staff.
And you've been plugging along at about that 300 closings a year level for a few years now. Is that correct?
Yes, we did. Last year we did 301. The year before that, 329. The year before that, I think it was 311. So, yeah, right around there. And we've been doing it with about 14 agents. We're actually in the middle of expanding right now and adding another 15 agents to take it to the next level as far as transactions go. And then we've implemented a few new systems to increase our lead conversion on our internet leads. So we're pretty excited about getting that in 2013 being a really good year.
You've brought up an interesting point. The traditional model for growing a successful real estate practice is to focus on sellers and leverage listings, since the typical buyer transaction takes 2 to 3 times as long as a typical seller transaction. But you've been successful by building your business by focusing on buyers. It appears to me that about 80% of your closings each year have been on the buyer side. Well, first of all, how did you come to just focusing on buyers, and how have you been making that work at such a large level, or how were you able to scale that up?
It really started in January of 06. We opened our brokerage in March of 05. And January of 06, the market was really starting to tank here really bad. We had about 100 listings at the time, and not one had sold for probably 4 to 6 months. And I just made a conscious business decision. I'm a businessman way before I'm in real estate. And I said, well, if listings aren't selling, I want to master buyers. If we master buyers, we don't have to really care if we have listings or not because we'll have all the buyers. And that's pretty much what happened. While everybody else was falling down, we were gaining 20% every year as far as growth, which is pretty exciting. And basically, it was just a business decision not to take listings until about 2010. We started taking listings again and really didn't start doing them strongly till this year. Now, it'll be another part of our focus. We're trying to figure out a good online program for generating listings. Really, really difficult. Buyers are simple, but listings online is a whole new animal that we're working on right now.
So you've been focusing on these buyers for about 5 years, maybe 6. You started out more like a traditional agent. You were getting a whole bunch of listings. You were got up to 100 listings, but that market wasn't working out. Because the market had tanked, you started to move over into buyers and took your focus off of listings. Is that correct?
That's exactly it. It just didn't make sense to me being a business person. Why would I want to carry a bunch of listings that aren't selling? And then the other factor is, the owners were calling the agents and yelling at them, of course, right? And who do they call when the agents don't answer the phone? They call me and yell at me. And I have a really, really simple motto in life. If it ain't fun, I ain't doing it. And it wasn't fun getting all those phone calls and people yelling at me all the time because my agents wouldn't answer the phone. So it was just a conscious business decision.
And now it sounds like you're moving back towards adding on listings or bringing sellers back into the mix, since that's what's starting to occur. Those properties are starting to sell again.
Yep, exactly. The market seemed to change. Actually, it kind of changed on a dime back in June. When I said a dime, it changed that quickly. Went from being in a buyer's market to a seller's market in a matter of weeks. I wasn't planning on doing the listing stuff till the end of the year, but we've been testing several programs now to do better on our listings. We do them through, as you mentioned at the beginning, foreclosures, but we're also encouraging our agents to go from 75% of their business from internet leads to more like 50%, and the rest on those on listings. So we're getting there.
You've mentioned this business a couple times. I want to get a big picture model in our head. Do you own this brokerage?
Yes.
Okay. The people that are working in the brokerage, are they only working on the team, or are they also independent agents?
They're all independent contractors. Basically, we run our brokerage a lot different than most brokerages. I don't hire agents just to hire agents. The typical real estate model is recruit, and hopefully, you get 20% making you money. Because of our programs, we're very, very financially and emotionally involved with our agents as far as helping them become successful. We don't go after top agents anymore. We go after agents that have really good work ethic and just don't have the right either support or technology behind them to make them successful. And this is going to sound horrible, so don't take it this way, but I base the business model on mediocrity, and I base that off of a book called Good to Great, if you're familiar with Jim Collins. It's one of my favorite books, and he says, good is the evil of great. And it's such a great line because most people are happy just being good. And I have a lot of really good agents. I only have a couple of great agents. So it's interesting. It's an interesting philosophy for building a brokerage or a team. It's just an understanding of realism. You'd rather have 20 to 30 agents doing 18 to 24 sales a year than have 100 agents with 20 agents doing that same number. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, before I get too far in, Mitch, why don't you tell us, where are you at? You're in Melbourne, Florida. Where is that located?
Yeah, we are 45 minutes east of Orlando. We're basically at the Space Center. My entire house shakes when the rockets go off. It's very cool. It's a beautiful, it's a great area here. So we're about 45 minutes to Orlando. We are about 2.5 hours to Fort Lauderdale, about 2.5 hours to Jacksonville, 2.5 hours to Tampa. It's a really great location as far as access to the entire state.
Describe your current real estate market.
It's interesting. We're low on inventory, but I think that's something I'm hearing as a common thread around the country when I talk to people around the country. Our inventory went from, I think in 2011, we had 8,500 listings in September, and now we're down to about 1,900. We've really lost a lot of our inventory. A lot of those are homes that expired or went through foreclosure and things like that. We lost 60% values here. One of the worst in the country, obviously. My house particularly went from 6.25 down to 2.25 at one point. So it's a tough market. If we had more inventory, we'd probably be selling twice as many homes because we have so many buyers right now looking and just not enough inventory. Prices are, on the county average, about $117,000 countywide, and we average about $154,000 for the brokerage. So we try to be a little bit higher end on that, which is part of our lead conversion process, of course.
Yeah, that's a pretty dramatic fall in values, and so that explains why you moved away from the traditional listings. Everybody was underwater.
Yep, exactly. And we're still in the same problem. I mean, most people here, if you bought your house 2002 or later, you're underwater. I mean, if you bought it traditionally with a 20% down or 10% down, whatever.
If you were to look out at your market right now, what percentage of the sales are retail traditional sales versus REO and short sale?
Yeah, surprisingly, we've got about 600, so probably about 30% are REO short sale, and 60%, 70% are regular resale now, which is better. We were at about 50-50 for a while there, so it's getting better.
Just a curiosity, if you were to try to identify what occurred there and during the summer to turn your market around, could you put your finger on it? Did anything happen?
Being this area, it's a tough area because you have the media constantly telling the public that, Florida's free. You can buy a house on the ocean for $10,000 now. And I think people realized, and it just happened in the middle of the summer, and by the way, we start school in August, so it might be the reason why it started, in June and July. Just I think people realized, interest rates are 3.5%. Prices are the lowest they've been since 1999. If we don't buy now, we're going to miss the boat. I just think that's kind of what's happened right now. And pretty much right now, all of our listings that are priced correctly are gone within a couple of weeks.
So the days on the market is now under 30, is that correct?
For things that are priced correctly, I think countywide is still around 75 or so is what I'm reading. But, it all depends on how you price your property. You still have to, they average that out. There's still a lot of properties that are overpriced.
What is the population in your area there?
We are at 500,000 people.
Is that the city or the county?
That's the entire county.
So it's a good size market.
Yeah, we handle the whole county. So, yeah, we actually, it's kind of interesting. We know we have more realtors than we do homes for sale on the market right now. We have 3,000 realtors and we have 1,900 single family homes. But, you know, interesting numbers, and I don't, this has nothing to do with the phone call, but it's interesting because I'm sure it's pretty much the same everywhere. I'm a stats guy, so I did some stats on realtors at the end of last year. And out of 3,000 realtors, only 107 did more than $4 million in business, and only 500 did more than $1 million in business. So think about that. 500 out of 3,000, I don't know what that percentage is, but not a lot, 20% maybe, were doing enough to even live, to even eat.
Right, so there's a lot of part-time agents.
Yeah, or part-time, we're just really haven't got it. I think again, the biggest mistake for most agents, and like I said, I'm interviewing right now agents, which I've been doing every day, all day for the past week. Most of them, the biggest thing I see from them is that they don't have the right systems in place, or they don't have any systems, or they don't have any training. So they get into this business, and they're like, how do I make money? And then the referral business is pretty much gone. Anybody who lived on referrals in the past, that's changed dramatically because now instead of me saying to somebody, hey, do you know somebody in Melbourne, Florida? They're just going online and looking, can look at listings. So the whole dynamic of real estate is changing dramatically. It's pretty interesting.
Do you have a niche or a specialization in your market?
Not really. We are pretty much, we'll work with anybody that will work with us. You know, I mentioned before, I mean, most of our stuff comes from the internet. So we get the whole gambit. We get, you know, $1 million homes, and we get our, you know, 100,000 homes. So we don't really niche. I got a couple of agents that are strictly beachside. We have a beachside office, so I probably have about half a dozen agents over there that strictly do the beachside. But other than that, we pretty much will handle everything residential.
We're going to get into these internet leads and them coming in, but in the big picture, if you were to look at them, are you seeing a large grouping of a certain kind of buyer that is coming in through your internet advertising?
It's an interesting mix. You'll get your regular buyers, you know, buyers meaning that are realistic in pricing and stuff like that. We'll have our buyers that come in that think they're going to buy the $1 million home for $50,000. But no, it's a huge amount. I mean, we get commercial leads from it. We get vacant land leads from it. So it's really pretty much all over the place.
Okay, so it's not all first-time home buyers. It's a whole group of people.
It's all the place.
Are you working mainly with buyers from your market, or are you also working with a lot of relocation?
Yeah, 80% of our buyers come from out of state.
Do they come there for a permanent residence or for a vacation home?
Most of the permanent residents, most. You know, we sell a decent amount of vacation homes, too, but most people are relocating here. This is a great area to retire. It's not very crowded like, you know, some of the other areas of Florida. We get a little bit of everybody, but, you know, I would say majority of it's relocations.
Yeah, so you kind of hit on what I was wondering is if you had a large employer there that was drawing a lot of people in, or if it was more of the retirement aspect. It sounds like it's more retirement.
Well, it's both. We have some pretty large companies. We have NASA. I mean, that was a pretty good employer. They're not small jobs, but they're still pretty good there. We've got some pretty nice companies moving in. SpaceX, which you've probably seen on TV, is in here now. A lot of the old shuttle players are on that now. We have Harris Corporation. We've got a lot of companies moving to the area. They're offering some really good incentives. Port Canaveral, which I think is the second largest port in the country, is being expanded right now, and that's adding 3,600 jobs. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. Because it's so inexpensive to run a business here, mainly just from logistics and location and stuff like that with the port here. Orlando, literally from my house to the airport's 40 minutes. You know, it's a good location. So a lot of businesses are relocating here, which is hopefully going to improve our job market more.
Let's now start talking about how you're bringing business in to your organization. A big part of what you've been doing is the internet. You 75% of your business last year came from the internet. And so the open-ended question is, what are you doing there in the internet to bring so much business in?
Well, I got videos of myself dancing. That's really, yeah. That's really done well for me.
Sure it has.
Yeah, if you saw what I look like, you'd be laughing even harder. Little short, little bald, older guy. So I don't think anyone looks at me dancing. Actually, it's pretty interesting. I mean, internet is such an easy way to generate business. We do, the majority of our business we do is from pay-per-click marketing, and whether it be Google or HomeGain, if you're familiar with HomeGain. But that's pretty much what we do. We have them coming to specific landing pages within our site based on what they're searching, and that allows us to capture a high quantity of leads. I think right now we capture between 12 and 15% of the people that visit our site become leads. So that's pretty, it's pretty sizable.
It's pretty strong.
Yep.
It's about 1 in 8.
Yeah, right around there, yeah. Okay. And then a lot of people, you know, and I like to explain this to people when they're thinking about internet stuff, and we make everybody register. We have what's called forced registration, which a lot of agents don't do that. And the reason why they don't do that is they don't want to offend the person coming to their site. And I always kind of chuckle at that. I'm like, okay, so you're in business to generate business and capture leads when you do all your marketing, but you don't want to actually capture the lead because you feel like you're going to offend somebody. It doesn't quite make sense to me. From a business standpoint, if you're in business, and I don't care what type of business you have, the job is to generate leads, right? And then convert those leads to sales. We actually did a study, a couple of other internet guys did this with me. We put two sites side by side that were exactly the same, with the same type of marketing, and ran them for a year. And the sales difference was from the one that we forced registration, that we made people register, to the one that wasn't was 10-1. Kind of proved our point pretty quickly. Well, it took a year of testing, but a year of doing it. But after a year, there was a 10-1 ratio in sales. Pretty amazing. So my belief is if you capture 15%, which is pretty high, say you capture 15%, the mindset is, well, what about those other 85 people? I'm like, what about them? And I care about the 15 I capture. I don't care about those other 85 people.
And the other 85% weren't signing up when you didn't ask for registration either, correct?
Exactly. That's my point. Yep, exactly.
So the foresight in your test earned 10 times as much. That's amazing.
Yep.
That's amazing.
And those are real. And what we did is we ran it out of a group in Seattle that we work with, part of my education stuff. We had one guy who was totally believing everything I teach, and the other guy totally didn't buy any of it. He's like, nope, that's not how you do real estate, because, you know, you've heard that before. This is how you do real estate, this way. You know, blinders. Paradigm paralysis. I love that. So we got them both to do this test for the year. And as soon as the year was over, we had a phone meeting with the group, and the guy was completely sold. He was kind of embarrassed that he had thought the way he did for as long as he did.
Well, it was costing him money.
Yeah, well, he lost 90% of the sales he could have had. Think about that.
And the dollars that he was spending on the advertising.
Yep, exactly.
Try to describe for us what you mean by this forced registration. Walk us through it. Somebody comes to the site for X, and you can tell us what that is. And then what do they see and what happens? Why are they being required to register? Kind of walk us through that.
Sure. It's pretty simple. We don't send anybody to our homepage. Everybody ends up on a landing page. So all of our marketing ends up on a specific landing page, city specific. So if they search Cocoa Beach, for instance, they're going to end up on a Cocoa Beach landing page. And every one of our landing pages is an IDX landing page. So we take an IDX search, we make that IDX search into a landing page. They can do their search for the property. Before they can hit the search button, they have to put their name, email, and phone number in. And that's how we capture the names. And we also know at that point what they've searched. So it allows us to take it to the next level with our lead conversion processes.
I'm trying to picture that in my head. They come into the site. What do they see when they land? Are they seeing properties, or are they just seeing a screen that says, if you want to search?
Just a search page.
Okay, so they come in, they see a form that they would fill in for what they want to search.
Exactly.
On that form, are you requesting their name and email address, or do they click that button, they go to a second page, and that's where they're being requested?
No, we do it right up front. We've tested a whole bunch of capture forms. You know, because there's another type of capture form called teaser listings. So they can look at 3 or 4 or 5 properties, and when they click on that 5th property, a box comes up and says something. I have a philosophy on it. I don't know if it's a right philosophy or a wrong philosophy, but it works for me. Basically, I look at it as when I make them, you know, give us their name and email address and phone number up front, they know what they're getting. I'm asking for your stuff up front. When you tease them, I believe that more people will sit there and be aggravated with that in more like a bait and switch. So, again, not because I do this, everything, I tested it. We tested this probably 2 years ago now with a side-by-side site, and I did this in my office here, and we did one with the regular registration form and one with the teaser listings. And it wasn't a huge difference, but it was 2% higher capture rate with the form. So 2% is 2%.
So it was 2% higher by not showing teaser. but requesting the information directly up front.
Exactly. So we got a higher capture rate that way.
And possibly not as angry if they come off of the teaser sheet.
Yeah, we never get anybody angry, which is really cool. We call all of our leads, and we can get into that in a little bit. But we never, I mean, really, I can count one hand how many times in the past several years that we've had anybody get upset because we called them.
Let's go back, and I want to just, you probably mentioned it, but on this form, what were the primary pieces of information you wanted from this lead? You wanted their name, their email. Was there something else?
A phone number.
A phone number. You are requesting phone as well. Okay.
We request it, but we don't make it mandatory. And the reason why we don't make it mandatory is we found that if we make it mandatory, 50% of the phone numbers are wrong. And we found that if we don't make it mandatory, 50% won't fill it in, the other 50% are right.
And so you're getting about 50% of the phone numbers?
Yep. Yeah, we capture about 60%, about 10% are bad. Yeah, so we do pretty well with that. And all we're doing on the forms, I'm really into simple. I like simple. I think a lot of people get way too complicated in this whole stuff. All we're asking for on their page is, are you looking for, what type of home are you looking for, residential or condo or commercial? How many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, what price range, and what cities? That's it. Oh, and then we ask them two questions. Do you have a home to sell? And would you like information on financing?
Do you make the name mandatory?
Nope. The only thing mandatory is the email address. We actually sold Mickey Mouse a house about 4 years ago. He wrote Mickey Mouse, but his email was good. And he really didn't look like Mickey Mouse.
Let's do this. Let's actually back up and go back up the sales funnel, back to the top. We'll work our way down your system here. You first mentioned that you're doing pay-per-click, Google, and HomeGain. Let's talk about that. Let's start with Google. What does that mean? Explain that to us. If we hadn't heard this before, what would that mean, and how are you going about it?
Sure. Well, Google has their AdWords program. And that's basically when you do a search on Google, your top two results and all the results on the right-hand side are all sponsored listings, sponsored links. So those are people paying for those placements. So we're going to, buy those things on a pay-per-click, meaning they only pay when someone actually clicks on my site. That's the beauty of internet marketing, is you know exactly where every penny goes, and it's all trackable because you know exactly how many people click on your site. And based on capturing leads, you know exactly how many leads you got based on what you got. So that's what we're doing. It's easy to do. Being really good at it is difficult. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. But it's because if you don't do it correctly, you can spend a lot of money and waste a lot of money. Meaning if you don't have good capture pages, you don't want to do it. In my area here, you could pay $2 a click, $3 a click. That means every time someone clicks on my site, that's $3. So that's a lot of money. So those are being on top of your pay-per-click program is very important. And again, can make or break somebody. I've seen people spend thousands of dollars because they didn't know what they were doing, not even capture a lead. I've seen people spend thousands of dollars and know how to do pay-per-click, but they didn't understand landing pages and didn't understand making people register. So they'd spend $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 and get 4 or 5 leads.
Well, my assumption from what you've said so far about your other parts of your business is you do a lot of testing. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's kind of a downfall for me. That's all I do is test. A couple of things. Before I teach anybody this stuff, I want to make sure it works. And secondly, before I roll anything out big time in my office, I got to make sure it works. And you can't test something over a week or two or three. It's, generally the minimum is 3 months, usually 6 months or more.
Could you give us, say, your top three best ideas on how to make this Google ad work so people like it and click on it and go to your landing page?
Sure. A couple of things. One, all you do is pull up a page that you'll be working on. So if I pulled up Melbourne Real Estate, I could look at Melbourne Real Estate and see what everybody else is doing. You need to do something the headline has to be different than what everybody else is doing. Or you're just like everybody else. You have to set yourself aside a little bit. So that's really important. The body of it has to, you've got two lines or three lines to tell exactly what your site's going to do. So mine might say something like search for homes in Melbourne, Florida, search for homes in Cocoa Beach, Florida, things like that. And then finally is your placement. Realtors, including myself, have pretty large egos. And we like to see ourselves on top. We like to see ourselves ranking first. But the problem with that is the cost is so much because most realtors don't have a clue what they're doing. So what happens is they bid the price up. So to give you an example, when I first started doing pay-per-click with real estate, Google wasn't out yet. It was Yahoo. And I was only paying 15, 20 cents a click, sometimes 10 cents a click. Whereas now you're paying $2 to $3 for that same click. And that's because realtors come into the market not really getting what they want to do, but they want to be number one. So they start bidding $2 to $3 when if you all actually talk to each other, you could do all this for pennies on the dollar. But, of course, realtors won't do that. So your placement is really important. I don't ever try to be the number one person. I like number three, because number three can show up in a few different spots. One, it will show up at the bottom of the page, but it'll also show up at the top of the right-hand corner. You know, the list on the right-hand side on Google of sponsors, you'll usually show up at the top there. So I want to be number three is my favorite spot to be. And you're probably going to say it pay about a third less than everybody else.
How are you making sure you're showing up number three? Are you able to select that as an option when you buy, or do you have to just keep testing your price purchase bid to see when you can get around number three?
Yeah, you just got to play with it. There's no – Yahoo actually had a better model until they switched it probably in 2002 or three. Yahoo, you could actually pretty much pick exactly where you wanted to be. And back then, I knew exactly how to kick people out. I could easily kick people out. I don't get to the whole details. It's a little complicated. But basically, now you've got to kind of play with it. You can still do that with Google. You can still make it so people pay more and your competition pays more, and then they end up leaving because they're not getting results. But it's just a trial and error. You play a little bit, and it's not difficult. It's really, really simple, actually. But it just takes monitoring. At the time, and I don't carry this many anymore, I had 500 keywords back in 05 and 06 before I started using the Home Game product, because that really helped me a lot.
You've mentioned your body copy, and it sounds pretty similar to everybody else, so I assume that your headlines were unique and different. Could you give us a couple of headlines you've used that have been successful?
Yeah, I've used a whole bunch of them, so off the top of my brain, it'll be tough to give you them. But the biggest one is, you know, really is just telling exactly what the page is, you know, and that might be as simple as Cocoa Beach Homes for Sale. Other things that I've used is we help more people relocate than anybody else in the county, things like that. I try to be more specific on certain things. I've done one on for listing ones, sell your house yourself, and that's brought people to the site. So, you know, we try different ones. I haven't really spent too much on Google the past few years because I've been doing, you know, using HomeGain more and more. But the, you know, it's all about coming up with creative links. You know, I've always, you know, how to buy, you know, click here to learn how to buy foreclosure. We send them to a foreclosure page. There's not a lot of people advertising foreclosures online. We try to look at what everybody else is doing and do something a little bit different. And we can't always do that. Sometimes there's just not much choice, and you just got to do what's there, you know.
You mentioned that you've winded down a little bit on Google. What percentage of your ad budget are you putting into Google AdWords right now?
AdWords, I'm probably only doing 5% of my spend. Yeah, and it used to be 100% of my spend.
Now, you mentioned Home Gain. For those of us that don't know what that is, why don't you break that down for us? What is that?
Yeah, Home Gain is a interesting company, and I'll tell you the quick story on it because it's kind of funny. They called me up, and you guys all know this, they're out there listening to this. You get phone calls every single day from someone telling you how to do everything. So they called me up, and at the time I said I had 500 words on Google AdWords, and they said, we have a pay-per-click product too, and we can do it better than you can. And I hear that every day, so I said, that's great, good luck, and I hung up. But at the time I was spending about $2 per click, and he was quoting me 79 cents. So I said, well, you know, what do I get to lose? It's a pay-per-click, so let me try $1,000 and see what happens. Well, an unbelievable thing happened. We were averaging about an 8% capture rate at the time. At $2 a click, at 79 cents, all of a sudden I got a 16% capture rate, and my leads just kept pouring in. Within 2 weeks, I switched my entire $10,000 a month budget to Home Gain. It's a specific product. They have lots of products. We use a product called BuyerLink. So if you want me to give you the address, you can check it out. It's homegainbuyerlink.com, and that allows you to go and see if they have anything available in your area. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. We actually own the entire county. We bought the entire county now. So keep our competition up. So the advantages of using that over Google is you're the only one that the people come to, meaning when you go to Home Gain, and you can go to Home Gain and try it out, homegain.com or the BuyerLink one, and when they click on Melbourne Real Estate, they end up directly on my IDX capture page. So So when you go to Google, if you put in Melbourne real estate, you end up with 20 other realtors, right? With us, you end up with just me.
I need to step back for a minute. I'm still trying to understand what HomeGain is. Is it a search engine? Is it a page that people land on because HomeGain is doing advertisements to draw people into their page? What is HomeGain?
HomeGain is a company that generates about 5 million people a month looking for houses. So they're a real estate portal, but they don't actually, unlike Zillow and Trulia, they don't actually carry listings or realtor.com. They use realtors like us to fulfill their listings. So they have multiple products. They have a buyer link product, which is the one I'm talking about. That's the pay-per-click product. They have another product, which is called Agent Evaluator. So people come online, they fill out a form, and that goes out to several agents within the area. And then the consumer picks which agent they want to work with, and the realtor pays a referral fee to HomeGain. And I know they have one other product, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. For me, all I really cared about was the buyer link product, because the buyer link product was the pay-per-click product, and that's, you know, I can capture my own leads quite well. I don't need leads from another company. They're an interesting company. I mean, it was the only one that I've found out they're doing what they're doing, and still to this day, I've been using them for, probably 5 years now. There's still nobody else doing what they're doing.
Okay. You said they're not using an IDX system. They're using listings from the people that are already in their system. Is that correct?
Yes. So they have agents that are, you buy the clicks on that area, and then they go directly to your IDX page. So if a consumer's on HomeGain.com and they want to search Florida, and they'll click on Florida, and then the Melbourne area, and then Melbourne real estate, when they click on Melbourne, instead of going to listings, they'll go directly to my capture page, and on my IDX page, which is my capture page.
What attractive mechanism does HomeGain use to bring the buyers in initially? Is it listings? Do they have properties that they're showing as being for sale, and that's what's drawing in this initial?
No, they do really good on their search engine optimization. They also have many partners like MLS.com. You get MLS.com, which obviously gets a ton of traffic. You're using the HomeGain. It's really the HomeGain interface that you're using. And they have tons of providers like that. So they get people directly to their site, to their search engine optimization, and they also do get a lot of people to their internet partners like MLS.com.
You said you're using this buyer link. I'm trying to imagine it in my mind's eye. The buyer goes in, they're interested in Cocoa Beach there, and a screen pops up to tell them a little bit about Cocoa Beach. Are you just kind of like a banner ad on the side of the page, or how does that work?
No, we're a direct link. So I'll walk you through the process. So someone goes to HomeGain.com, they click on Florida because they want to look at Florida. Then there'll be a list of all the different areas of Florida. So they click on the Melbourne area, which is our area. So they click on Melbourne area, then there'll be a list of every city within our area, within the Melbourne area. So then they see Cocoa Beach, so they click on Cocoa Beach, and that's going to go directly. There's no blurb. It'll just say search for homes in Cocoa Beach. They click on that, and that'll go directly to my Cocoa Beach search page,
which has their registration page, which they're kind of in that mindset anyway, because they've been going down through this narrowing process of geography. And so it seems reasonable to ask for a search information at the end.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it was really clever on their part. I mean, it's actually, I don't spend a lot of money on Google anymore because this is all I do. And here's the other thing that's nice about it versus Google. Google is a lot of work to maintain, especially if you're doing it at my level. I was taking about an hour to an hour and a half every day just to go through my keywords, make sure they're where I want them to be. Honestly, with HomeGain, I have not really looked at my marketing except for twice a year. I measure my capture rates through my different landing pages to see if I have to tweak anything. Other than that, I haven't spent 1 second looking at my marketing, which is really nice. I mean, it's freed up. It's, you know, you're talking about 7 or 8, 10 hours a week that are freed up. It's almost the time to play. I get to play golf more.
Comes back to that fun idea.
Yeah, that's right. Ain't fun, ain't doing it.
What percentage of your budget now is going towards HomeGain?
That is all my budget, 95% of my budget.
And are you generating buyer leads or both buyer and seller leads?
We basically go to get buyer leads, but with buyer leads, when we ask them that question, do they have a home to sell, we know if they're a local lead, we know this. You know, we're going to try to get the listing, which is where a lot of our listings come from. And if they're out of state, we're going to ask if they'd like one of our colleagues in their area come by and take a look at their house. And we generate a good amount of referral fees from that.
With Home Game, what is your cost per lead now?
My cost per lead runs around $8. And we close one out of 24. So if you look at that, it's what, a couple hundred bucks per sale. So would I spend $200 for a sale every single day of the week?
To compare it to Google, what is your cost per click?
Cost per click, again, Google is really, their prices are high, really high because of agents not knowing what they're doing and bidding the prices up too high. So Home Gain, I pay 79 cents and 99 cents per click, depending on which city.
Oh, still, okay.
Yep, which is compared to Google being $2 average. I mean, some like Cocoa Beach, you're probably paying close to $3 right now.
And so you're capturing about 1 in 8 of the people that come to your site, and that's where the $8 comes out at. And then of those, 1 in 24 end up buying with you.
Yep. Now let me clarify that though, because that's the number that we look at our total sales at the end of the year divided by the amount of leads. That gives us our 1 out of 24. The reality is, an internet lead is about 6 to 9 months before they're going to buy. We know that and this is the mindset you got to have when you're doing internet stuff. We know out of 100 leads, 95 are terrible. We know that. We don't care about it. We're only looking for the 5 out of 100 that are good. And your job as a salesperson is to prospect, right? I mean, if you know anything about prospecting, that's sales is prospecting. The more you prospect, the more business you get. The beauty of internet marketing, it's all warm calls. And we're only looking for 5 out of 100. As long as we get that 5 out of 100, we're doing fine.
And that brings up the question of follow-up and conversion. How are you ferreting out the 5 out of the 100?
It's pretty easy. We just beg, and they come. Yeah, we're poor realtors. Will you please come help us? No. It's a process. My guess is that almost everybody listening to this call right now doesn't do anything with an internet lead except maybe send them an email saying, "Hey, you're on my site. Can I help you? What can I do for you?" Something to that degree. My guess is that everybody listening to this call may call the person once and never call back again, whether they get a hold of them or not. And my guess is even if they did get a hold of them, they probably don't call back if they're not buying for 6 to 9 months or more. Probably don't call them back ever again. That's where all agents fail. I talk about mindset a lot. Mindset for my agents is different than mindset for almost every other agent out there. Most agents will see someone that's not buying a house for 9 months, will say, "Call me in 9 months when you're ready." And we say it's a 9-month opportunity to create a relationship. Big, big difference in mindset. It's one of the reasons why we convert as much as we do. But there's a system involved. We don't just get a lead and do nothing with it. A lead comes into our system. We send out a thank you letter within a few minutes after they get the lead. "Thank you for using the site. My name is Mitch. I'll be sending you a list of properties shortly. Give me a call to discuss." 5 minutes after that, we send them a list of properties based on what they were searching. We also, if they didn't give us a price range, we wouldn't put in default price ranges for those cities. Remember, every landing page is city specific. And then after we send them the list of properties, we're going to make the phone call and talk to them. If we don't get the call, they're automatically set up in listing updates anyway, so they're going to receive listings based on their initial search. If we do get a hold of them, then we're going to change the group that we put them into, and we're also going to may change their search so they're getting listing updates. And depending on the group we put them into, it depends on the drip campaign that they're going to receive based on that group. And I know I said that really fast, so hopefully you got it.
Well, let's break that down a little bit.
I knew you were going to say that.
You send out this thank you letter right off the bat, and I'm assuming this is all through email, right? You don't have an address for them.
Yes, all email, yeah.
And then you send them a list of homes based on what they search for. Actually, let me break that down even more. You send them out a thank you letter. Is that automated, or is someone manually putting that in?
Yeah, our entire system is automated. So everything I just said to you is automated. Now, we weren't until we built our software product, of course. So originally, we would do all that manually. So you would get a lead. So for those of you who aren't automated, and that would be almost everybody, when you get a lead in, you should have in a Word document the thank you letter. You just copy and paste it into an email and send it out to the customer. And then at that point, go into your MLS and do a search based on what they were searching. Your lead, whatever you're using to capture leads, should give you at least enough information, on what they're looking for, the city or price or something like that. If it was a property inquiry lead, a lot of people get property inquiry leads. If it's that, look at the listing they inquired about and then send them more lists like that, more properties like that. So we did all that manually. And then we would set them up in an email campaign. And our email campaign back then was really simple. It's a little more evolved now. But we just sent out a monthly newsletter and then a just checking in letter every 6 weeks. And the just checking in letter is the most important email that we send out of everything that we do. It generates more business than anything else we do. And it's very simple. All it says is, hi, so-and-so. Just checking in, making sure you're getting my listing updates. If you have any questions, let me know. Remember, I can show you any homes in Brevard County. Please give me a call. Call or send me an email. That's it. Pretty simple. And we get so many responses from that, from people, you know, emailing back, oh, yeah, I'm getting your listings. Keep them coming. They're great. All sorts of stuff. And we get just tons and tons of response from it.
The original thank you letter, is it phrased similarly?
Thank you letter is really simple. Thank you for using our website at melbournehomesearch.com and Tropical Realty. My name is Mitch. I'll be your realtor, and I'll be sending you a list of properties shortly. I'll also be giving you a call to discuss. I'm paraphrasing this, of course. I don't know word for word. I'll also be giving you a call shortly to discuss what I'm sending you to make sure I'm sending you the right stuff. If you have any questions in the meantime, please email me or give me a call. And then we always make our call. We try to do it within 4 hours, always within 24 hours. You know, obviously the quicker the better. We always like to send the list of properties first because that way when we call, it's an easy phone call. It's just, hey, I sent you a list of properties. Did you get it? And you take a conversation from there.
When people go to the original landing page, the squeeze page, and all their information is being requested, including this email, are they given notice at that point that you're going to be following up with them somehow? Are they opting into your list or is that just happening?
That's just happening. We give them the thank you letter, you know, comes out after that, and they can opt out at any time. At the bottom of every single email we send them, they can opt out. You know, one of the things when you're doing this type of stuff, it's very, very important that you follow the email rules, which we do extremely well. Yeah, it's important because you get blacklisted. And how did I find that out? I found it out the hard way. I got blacklisted from pretty much everybody, Yahoo, Comcast, Bell South, pretty much everybody. I had AOL. I had to go in and talk to them and, you know, on the phone and fill out these forms and all this stuff. And they explained the only thing I was doing wrong is when I didn't know what I was doing, I didn't have an opt-out on every email. They said, as long as you have an opt-out on every email and people can walk away from, you know, opt out of what you're sending them, then there's no problem at all.
You've mentioned you want to make this phone call right away. What percentage of the people, when you make the initial phone call, want to do something?
Sure, great question. Almost nobody. Most people aren't ready to buy. They're just starting the search, or they're just, you know, most people aren't ready to buy. Now, with that said, there's some interesting stats because I like my stats, right? In 2011, 37% of our sales came from leads from 2011. So that means that 63% came from leads that were 2010, 9, and 8 and older. 20 sales came from leads from 2004. So we're just starting the relationship when we make that first phone call. With that said, 40% of that 37%, right, bought in 90 days. So there's a percentage they're going to buy now, but there's a much larger percentage that's not going to buy for, you know, 6 months, a year, or more. And every market's different. One of the people that I trained in Denver, they were just here the other day, and 80% of their business, their lead captures are local. So it makes it a lot easier for them to set an appointment today. Where people, you know, coming here have to fly here. They can't just, you know, drive over from, you know, New York or Boston and be here, you know, tomorrow to look at houses. So depending on the market you're in will determine on how quickly you can work with the customer.
Now, after you have this conversation or this attempted conversation, you start to drip on them. You mentioned what your old system was. Let's talk about your system today. You said you do two things. One, you have a listing update, so you're sending them out new listings, and then also drip email. Is that the same, or are those two different things?
They're two different things. The listing updates is just what it sounds like. It's just based on what their initial search was. Oh, well, before we go, there's one question. I didn't answer your question completely before, because 40% of the people we get a hold of on the first call. By the fourth call, we've got a hold of 80%. So we call four times on every lead before we give up on them.
How often do you keep trying to call them back? Do you try and call back all that same day, or do you spread them out?
Yeah, probably like two times a week, basically. The first day, then two or three days later, then two or three days later, then two or three days later. And what we do is we try to pay attention to the time that they were on the site, if they saved a listing or they came back on the site or read an email that we send them, what time are they doing that? And that's generally the time we're going to call them. So, for instance, some people, you know, most people at work can't answer their cell phones, right? They actually have real jobs, unlike us. So they can't answer their emails, I mean their phone calls. So you'll see on the internet that when we're looking at when they read their emails and stuff, it'll be 7 o'clock at night, 6 o'clock at night, or 8 o'clock in the morning. We're going to look at those times, and that's probably when we're going to call them. A lot of times you'll see 11 o'clock in the morning to 12 o'clock, even through 1 o'clock. That's, you know, lunchtime. People are on the internet, you know, checking their stuff. So we try to check those numbers before we make the phone calls so we can have a better chance of getting a hold of them. But the interesting stat is you're going to get a hold of 35 to 40% on your first call. But if you actually do the work to call that fourth time, you'll get a hold of 80%. And I don't do five times, but supposedly the five time is 90%.
So why don't you do the fifth time then?
You know, I have enough trouble getting my agent to make the first call. We actually have a group now. I think I wrote in the letter that I gave you, our LCAs, lead conversion agents, which are lead coordinators. They'll actually follow behind them and make the second, third, and fourth call, and sometimes fifth, sixth, seventh call if needed. You know, if it's a really good lead, we're going to chase it.
Who is calling back these leads? Are your agents calling back these leads initially, or who's making the call?
Yeah, the initial call is from the agent. We used to do it with the lead conversion agents, LCAs, but it was just going to be too much. We have too many leads, and I don't want to hire more LCAs. So the agents make the initial phone call, and then the LCAs follow behind them, and they'll make the second, third, and fourth call.
So this is a member of your team, this lead conversion agent. Are they licensed agents?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody in my office actually is licensed, including all my admin.
And this lead conversion agent, their only job is to make phone calls and to do follow-up?
Yep. Last month, actually, I didn't do October's numbers. September's numbers were 5,000, it's approximate, 5,000 dials and 1,200 contacts.
How many people? How many lead conversion agents?
Two. That's two people.
How many appointments were set?
I do not know off the top of my head, but I can tell you we closed 37 contracts in September, 32 or 34 in October.
When the lead conversion agent calls, what is their objective? Is their objective just simply to make contact?
It's the same as the agent. They'll call on behalf of the agent, say, you know, hi, this is Julie, is one of our coordinators. This is Julie. I'm Roger's assistant, and we just want to make sure the list we're sending you is what you're looking for and when you're looking to come in and buy. And if they're looking soon, then we start talking about financing with them. That's one of the reasons why we have licensed agents doing it, because they can actually talk real estate. And they get paid a percentage of the sale plus a salary.
This person gets paid a salary plus a bonus as a percentage of the sale. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly, yeah. And depending on the market, I'm helping a guy out right now in D.C. where the average sale is like 920. You know, in that case, you can probably get away with paying just commission for the position. In our area here, where an average price is 117 for the county or 150-something for us, they can't make enough money on just a 5% commission to live and pay their bills. So I have to pay a salary here. If our sales were, you know, $500,000-$700,000 a whack or more, and they're making $500, $600 on a sale or $1,000 on a sale, that's a whole different game.
What kind of salary do you need to pay to attract them?
We basically $10 an hour is what we pay. So $1,600 a day, and then 5% commission. And that's in this thing. You know, you can't live on that, but you can. You know, they make a decent living. I mean, they'll probably make in the 40-plus thousand range this year.
And that's a full-time job? They're working 40 hours a week?
Oh, yeah.
And are they making phone calls the entire time? Or in their day of 8 hours, how many hours are they actually calling?
They call different hours, too. So my whole thing with my staff is I don't really care what hours you work as long as you get the job done. You know, I'm a little flexible in that stuff. So they get families and stuff, so they do it. Sometimes they're calling it on night. Sometimes every other weekend we give the other person off, so they don't have to make any phone calls, and we shut their agent's leads off for the weekend. And so every other weekend they're completely off. I don't make them call on Sundays, of course, unless they want to. You know, keep in mind, the more calls they make, the more money they make. You know, so that's kind of what they look for. You know, they're calling all different times. A lot of times they'll call at night after dinner, because, you know, between 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock, you get a whole lot of people. We use a phone call dialing system called Mojo. And so they're able to call three people at the same time, which has been really a breakthrough for us in a lead conversion, because you couldn't dial that many phone numbers in the past.
So their hours are, I'm trying to get an idea of that. Are there structured hours, or do you just say, make X number of calls this week, or how does it work?
They know what I'm expecting from them as far as, you know, how many appointments we... I mean, the main goal is how many appointments are we setting for the agents. And my goal is to have every agent showing, you know, 8+ people per month. And we get there sometimes, sometimes we don't. You know, so, we've gone back and we're reevaluating right now, actually, because we've made some major changes the last month, you know, hoping to get a better point on so I can actually give a quota that they have to hit every month. So we're working on that right now.
So currently they don't have a quota on hours worked, number of dials made, or appointments set?
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty easy.
How do you make sure they make calls? Do they have to come into the office?
No, nope. The dialer tells me how many calls they make. So I look. So they can't fake anything. I see exactly what they call, exactly what they do. So, for instance, I mean, if they're not making the call, if they're not hitting to me, my number, if they're not doing at least $4,000 a month, then we're going to have a conversation. It's not been an issue. These girls work their tails off. I'm really blessed. I mean, they are really hardworking, and they really get what we do. And the other beauty for this position, which is totally has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but it's kind of cool, it was their idea, not my idea, is we needed to hire more agents. We want to get up to 30 agents. So I said, all right, well, how are we going to do that? You know, I run ads once in a while, but, you know, you don't really get a lot of agents from running ads. And they said, well, we'll just call every agent in the county. So they have, and I have been slammed with, I had four interviews this morning before I talked to you, and then I've got one after you, two after you, and then I've got tomorrow, I've got, I think, six. Wednesday, I don't have any. Thursday, I have two, and Friday, I think I have four or five. I mean, they're just setting up appointments for me left and right. We did 20 appointments 2 weeks ago and hired four, and I'm hoping to hire maybe six out of this group. We've already hired three so far, so three more will be good. And then we're going to stop for a little bit because I'm sick of interviewing.
The lead conversion agent, were these people that were already on the team that you moved into the position, or did you bring people from the outside to fill this position?
Yeah, I brought people in. Yeah, I came up with the idea. I realized not too long into this, I mean, I actually started the program about 4 years ago. We just really mastered it in the past 6 months, actually. I mean, and we're still testing. You know me, I told you I'm test, test, test. But basically, I put ads on Craigslist and got a lot of great responses from agents that I brought in, and obviously a bunch of them didn't make it past the phone call, since it's a phone call type of job, and if your voice isn't doing it for me on the phone call, there's no reason to bring you in for an interview. And I had about 10 people that I brought in, and honestly, out of the 10, there were probably six that I would have hired, and I hired the two best ones.
So these people were already licensed?
Yes.
So you didn't go out, for instance, and find telemarketers and then get them licensed. You went out and found agents who were good on the phone and put them in the position.
Exactly. There's a lot of realtors out there that love real estate, love talking real estate, but really have no desire to run around showing houses or going on listing appointments, but want to stay in the real estate business, and that's kind of the person that you're looking for.
So this lead conversion agent, do they work in your office or are they working from home?
They do both. They dial into the computers here to get on the dialer, so they can work from anywhere. They can work from their cell phone.
And then because they're doing that, you can track how many dials are being made.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great system. It's Mojo Selling Solutions, it's called. It's $150 a month. And we run, when we're finished hiring, we'll have 15 agents on each girl, each LCA. And you can put as many voicemails as you want. So when they're leaving a message, all they do is click a button, and that leaves a message for the agent. Hi, this is Marlena. I'm Roger's assistant. Please give Roger a call back at blah, 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 something like that. The other cool thing that's really funny that I thought was really hokey, I said, what happens when two people answer at the same time? They said, well, you just leave a voicemail that says, hello, hello, I can't hear you, I must have a bad connection, I'll call you back. And it works great. And I thought, I'm like, that's really hokey, but you know what? It works so well in getting our contacts, because all we care about is contact. That's our number one thing, is contact.
And then the system probably puts it back in to call them in the next few minutes anyway.
Yep. We put the system on hold. And so it's right there, and we see their name, and we just call them back, and we're done with that call.
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.